Create Art Podcast. Interview. Memoir as Art. Welcome, friends. This is Timothy Kimo Bryan, head instigator here at Create Art Podcast, where I bring over 20 years of experience in the arts in various disciplines to help you tame that inner critic and to create more than you consume. Now, how do we do that? Well, we do it with interviews, conversations, commentary, and projects. Today's episode is something kind of special. We're talking with Samuel Moore Sobel about his recent memoir that he just put out for us. And in that, he's talking about a traumatic event that changed his life and how he took that event and turned it into a memoir, into something very positive. So if you're looking for a very uplifting and enlightening story, check out his memoir. But first, listen to the episode and find out how he did it. All right. Thank you, everybody, for coming back and listening to Create Art Podcast, where we create more than we consume. Folks, I've got a very special guest on here with me today. He's got a brand new memoir. It's not a book of fiction. It's not a book of science fiction. It's a memoir. So the stuff in it actually happened. All right. As opposed to what I usually write about, which thank God doesn't happen. But tonight we have on the show here, Samuel Moore Sobel, and he's going to be talking about the book that he just wrote, his memoir that he just wrote, and we're going to be talking to him a lot about how he wrote it and you know, get into the meat and potatoes of all that good stuff. So everyone, I'd like you to welcome Samuel. Samuel, how are you doing tonight?
Good, good. Thanks so much, Tim, for having me on the show. It's an honor to be here with you tonight.
Well, it's great to have you here because a lot of people, they do write into the show and they do give, great show ideas, but, you actually wrote into me, you emailed into me, Timothy@createartpodcast.com. Everybody, you know, make sure you have that noted down for yourselves. You wrote into me and you told me, you know, what you were doing and you're interested in being on the show. And, I'm just going to jump right on into it. I have an older brother that has had third degree burns from an accident that he had probably before you were even born, actually. But he was a burn survivor, and your book talks about a specific time that you had where you survived a burn accident, and we're going to jump into that, and we're going to talk a lot about that. But before I get into that with you, Samuel, writing is huge for me, and reading your work, I can tell it's huge for you. When did you realize the power that words have?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tim. I think, you know, when it comes to the what it means to write, right? The written word is so powerful, and there's a power in it that is really unlike anything else that I've ever experienced. You know, being able, I can say things in writing that I just can't say speaking or anything else, right? So there's a power to the written word that I think is really important. For me, I came to know the power of the written word from a very young age, actually. I started reading the newspaper at a very young age. I talk about it actually early on in my book, and have a passage there that I talk about. But you know, I remember coming across newspaper stories and talking to my mom about those stories and kind of saying, you know, tell me about this, because it captured different stories. So, for instance, a chapter I have in the book, I talk about Regis Philbin and Kathy Lee Gifford, right, when she's leaving the show, and I'm really just mesmerized by this. You know, I'm 5 years old at the time, right? But I'm mesmerized by why is she leaving the show and why does she seem upset? And, you know, asking my mother all these questions, she was very patient with me and answering them. But I was just fascinated with reading the paper and the idea of a newspaper coming to your house and it's distributed to all these other places and all these other homes. and you're reading about these stories that other people are reading. And it was like this really kind of cool thing at this young age that I thought. So really from a young age, I really fell in love with the newspaper and writing. And because of that experience, I actually started my own newspaper when I was 8 years old called the Weekly Times. And I had about, in my heyday, I had 25 subscribers who all paid a quarter for an issue. And I would type it up and I would write about different things, you know, current events, my take on books that I'd read, things like that. And I did this for several years and distributed it to friends and family. And they were very gracious in indulging me and reading what I had to say. But writing was just always this lifelong love. And then from there, you know, ended up doing journalism, taking journalism in high school and writing for the newspaper there, and then taking on the opportunity to actually write a column in a local newspaper, which I still do to this day. So writing has always been just a part of my DNA and always been something that I was so drawn to. And there's such power in the words that you write. And that was one of the things I did as well as a high schooler. I would write letters to the editor, or I would, you know, through my columns, I would hear from other readers or other people who were impacted what I had to say. And I saw that power of the written word, that, wow, it can be a call to action. It can be spurring others on to do good in the world. There's so much power that you can do in words. And that's really what led me to write this book, was to motivate others to overcome their scars, but also to leave the world a little bit better than I found it. And that's been my goal.
Awesome. Awesome. And folks, Samuel's a little bit younger than I am. Obviously better looking than I am. that's why I'm doing podcasting. I really picked up with you being a young kid and picking up the newspaper at an early age. I was a big fan of watching the, I'm from Chicago, so we had our news at 10 o'clock. And when I moved to the East Coast, I found everyone has their news at 11 o'clock. And I'm like, shouldn't you be in bed at that time? But I would watch the evening news and see everything that was going on. At that time, we only had three channels because it was, the 70s and the early 80s, and we didn't have cable. And I really got hooked into the news. And then I had a teacher, maybe 5, 6, 7, something like that, around that age. And they said, are you reading the newspaper? They'd recommended that I read the newspaper. And I was like, well, of course I read the newspaper. I read the comic book section every Sunday. And I read the comics every Sunday. And they're like, no, read the other parts of the newspaper. And I picked, since I was watching the evening news so I wouldn't have to go to bed, so early at night, I would pick up the daily news, what would be happening in the world. And it was the stories that were happening, and they were real life stories. They were really happening. There was nothing fiction about it. It was just, this is happening, that's happening. Of course, in the late 70s, early 80s, not all the great news stories that we have now. I mean, there's no worldwide pandemic going on, in 82, 83. The Chicago Bears won the Super Bowl in 84, 85. That was our big thing. Yeah, in the 80s. That was what we did. But I pick up with you on the whole newspaper thing. Sticking with newspaper, because you are a journalist and you're still doing it. And a lot of people think, well, that's kind of a old form. We have the internet. We can read people's blogs. We can listen to people's podcasts. We can, get it, via the internet. Are you still finding people are invested in the printed page? And when you translate that to, obviously, blog articles or articles on the newspaper, from the newspaper on the internet, are people still interested in that?
Yeah. It's something that in some ways kind of surprised me, especially in this digital age, and where you're right. I mean, so much of, newspapers are kind of considered in some ways that physical print newspaper are almost a thing of the past, right? Or at least really rare. But I found through all the writing that I've done, whether it be guest blogging or, all the various forms of writing this book, it's been interesting to me that writing this column has been something that has generated interest among readers, and I've heard from people over the years who've read it, and they have. It's always cool to hear their, you know, their take on whatever it is that I'm writing, and so it's been something that really that local community, you know, it's the Blue Ridge Leader, which is in Loudoun County, and it's really cool to hear from people from throughout the county who really, you know, are invested in the story. And invested in the county. But it's also cool that it's been a way for me in some ways to kind of keep in touch with other people too. And I'll hear from, you know, I'll post on social media, right, when it gets posted online, and, you know, friends will reach out at different points and say, hey, I read your column and I think, you know, X, Y, Z. And it's a connection point. Even all these years later, I've been doing it for several years now. And it's cool to kind of see that it's still that connection point. Even it's a way for people to keep in touch with me, even people that I thought, you know, I'd lost touch with. And so it is something that people still read and still engage with. And it's really heartening to see that. And it's cool to be part of a community and be invested in the community. And my column is really a way to do that, especially when I'm writing about experiences that I've had, around in the community or elsewhere. But it's a way I see it as giving back to the community and investing in the lives of my neighbors.
I found after you had wrote to me, and I went to the Loudoun County paper that you have there, I read one of the articles there, and I think it was the one where you were talking with the middle school kid who was kind of depressed, and that one just gripped me. I was just like, I was that middle school kid, you know. I know what that kid was going through, and I was like, thank God that kid had somebody like you that took an interest and investment in their life. And I was just thinking, wait a minute, I get to talk to this guy in the podcast, you know, and just the way that you wrote it, you made me, I live here in Fredericksburg. I work all the time. I have my family and all that kind of stuff. But you made me care about this kid that, A, I'll probably never meet. I'll never know. My kids may run into them, and it made me kind of go, you know, I want to raise my kids to be like him, to take an interest and be very aware of what's happening around them, about the people around them, and about caring about other people. So, your writing in your column, in your memoir, really I don't want to say drags. It welcomes people in, and it affects us, and it makes us care about something that is more than just us. So definitely kudos to you on that. And folks, you need to go check out his column. If you don't walk out of his column without a couple of tears in your eyes, then we'll have to have a different conversation with that person.
Well, thanks, Tim. I appreciate that praise. Yeah, it was my most recent one that I just was published for November, and it was a story that I took from an experience in high school where, like you're saying, I was in peer, which I talk about actually in the book as well. But I didn't include that story in the book just for space constraints. But it was a story that really touched me, and I thought, you know, I'm seeing the articles about, you know, rising depression and suicide rates among teenagers, especially during the time of COVID-19. And I thought, hey, I want to do something to kind of, you know, make a small difference here. And so I put that column together and wrote through that story. I kind of drew on that story from a long time ago, and I'd never talked about it before publicly. And it's been cool to hear that from people who seem touched by that. And I, you know, I do, I still think about him, and I hope that my mentee, and I hope that everything worked out and that his story had a similar journey that I did, that I talk about in my book. But it's just one of those stories that's never left me. And I still, you know, think about, you know, that person and hope that everything worked out.
Absolutely. Now I'm going to stray a little bit from that. And I'm going to ask you to tell me which one is the prettier baby. I call it the prettier baby question, because we all love our works of art and all that good stuff, but we like some of our stuff a little bit better than other stuff. And now I'm not like that with my kids. I love my kids equally, and when they hear this in 18 or 20 years, they'll know. But you are, you have done the memoir, You write for the, you write the column. You're a public speaker. Public speaker, I say that with big old air quotes because we live in the time of COVID and we're doing a lot of Zoom calls. Let me tell you, we're doing a lot of Zoom calls here. But for you, when you're noticing your audience and their feedback to you, what is the most effective way for sharing your story, whether it be in person, telling it, you know, in person, Zoom call, I'm telling it that way, writing the memoir and having, you know, the reviews come back, or doing the column? What is, you know, the most effective way for sharing your story?
You know, it's complicated, right? Because, so I would say if you want to have, what's great about being able to do the in-person speaking, especially when we're in times where in person, the pre-COVID, you know, time where I was able to kind of do this in person and talk to people, what's amazing about that and what I love about communicating in that forum is that you always have people who come up afterwards, or at least I've in my experience has been, who come up and they share their stories and they share their heart and they share their scars, right? And so it's amazing to me. And there's such a feeling of connection that is really gratifying, especially in the moment of being able to connect with a person and look them in the eye and show your scars in person, essentially, right? And talk about that and to have that connection. It's a really cool feeling. And it's really powerful. But I will tell you what's really interesting is for a long time, I felt like I wasn't able to find a way to distill the story into a soundbite, right? So I'd have people who would ask me, I'd meet them for the first time, and they'd say, hey, what are the scars on your face? And I didn't really have a great answer for that or a way to distill it into a really short conversation for them to understand it. And so what's been great about the book is I've known people who knew me during that time or even knew me before the accident happened and then knew me through that experience who've gone back and read it and now have read the book and they're like, oh, I understand, right? There's a sense of understanding that I don't think was present even to those who lived this experience with me in some ways, or at least were present when I was living this nightmare after the accident. And so I think there's something really powerful about that written word. And I think my book probably encapsulates it better than anything else, right? Like, you know, when I do public speaking, I got 20 or 30 minutes, you know, maybe a little bit more, but I can't distill the whole story even into that. But the book gets close enough to be able to, you know, include the whole story. People can live through the experience as I'm writing it, you know, connect it through the written word and connect with it. And then when I get feedback from people who contact me and say, hey, I read this book and this really impacted me, it's really cool because I think that they have a deeper understanding reading the book than they would just hearing me speak. And there's again, so much in the book and there's so much to cover. It would be impossible to do it in just speaking. So I think I would have to say, if I had to choose one, it would probably be the book. Even though as much as I love public speaking, connecting in the moment, there's a depth to it that can't quite be captured in just speaking publicly.
I hear you on that. And I know that we're dealing with a lot of different generations that have a lot of different attention spans. I'm a weird one. I would sit and probably listen to you talk for about 3 or 4 hours versus like a 20 minute, as long as you could go, as long as you had a voice, I'd probably sit and listen to you for 3 or 4 hours. I'm weird like that though. And I'm a podcaster. So you know, I'm used to listening to a lot of people talk for a long time. And, you know, and telling wonderful stories. But for me, it would work out great for me on that way. But I agree with you. Having that book in hand, I can go back and read. And this is just basically, you know, a reading 101 that everyone should know. But you know, you can go back, highlight, and then you come back later and ask your questions on it and all that good stuff. Whereas if I'm sitting watching you live, I can't raise my hand and go, can you go back 17.3 minutes and redo that part again?
Right.
We can do that on a podcast, but not in the live setting like that. Well, and I'm weird like that too, because one of my favorite guys, Joe Frank, he's a spoken word artist. pre-podcaster on the West Coast. He passed away a few years ago, but I saw him in Chicago. And for 2 hours, he had the Goodman Theater sold out, packed. And for 2 hours, you could hear a pin drop. Everybody just, you know, nobody was even breathing for 2 hours. We just all held our breath and listened to the guy. And but then I was like, hey, I'm in a room of weird people just like me, so this is good. So that's what we need to do for you. We need to get you booked in the Goodman Theater as soon as everything opens back up and have you talk for 2 or 3 hours. And I'll find about 500 weirdos like me, and we'll just sit and listen to you for, you know, 3 or 4 hours like that. That's my next goal for you. Excellent.
Sounds great. I'm in, Tim.
All right. Good deal. Good deal. Plus, you know, and take you to Chicago, get you some good food out here. Virginia's got good food, but we'll get you some deep dish pizza. All right. Now, speaking about one of my most enlightening experiences, I'd like to jump in a little bit, because I know you have a lot of aha and a lot of realization in your book. But what would you say, and I don't want you to give too much away from your book, folks, you need to go buy the book. You can go onto his website. Samuel, can you give us your website, please?
You could go to www.samuelmoresobel.com. It's MOORE-SOBEL.com.
Perfect. Folks, you need to go there. I already promised him 3.2 million copies. So, folks, Christmas is coming. All right. Winter is already here for Virginians. It's coming. Make sure that you buy 5 copies, because you got a friend that needs to read this book. But
well, Tim, I'll say too, on right now on Amazon, it actually just went on sale as well. So it's almost a 9 or 10% sale off the list price. So you can get it on Amazon if you have Prime, free shipping. So it's called Can You See My Scars? And you can search for that on Amazon or search for my name and grab your copy now, because it's on sale right before the holiday.
Awesome. Awesome. And, you know, maybe when we do some live book signings, people can come up to you and have you sign the actual book. I know that's what I'm going to do as soon as I can get up, you know, to where he's at. You'll see me knocking on your door going, dude, sign the book. But want to jump in there for you. You know, what's the most enlightening experience you've had while writing this memoir? So it maybe not the most whiz-bang thing of your life entirely, because your life has been very interesting. But while you're writing the memoir, what's the thing that made you go, wow?
Yeah, you know, it's true. There's so many, you know, that's a good point that you make there. Like, as I write the book, there's so many of those realizations, right? As I'm going through, and I'm realizing myself as I'm writing it, right? As I've lived this journey towards healing, there's so many of those aha moments of like, there it is. And that's what I've been missing. I think the big thing as I was writing this, and you know, keep in mind, right? So this was a project. So when this happens September 1st, 2009, when I'm in this accident. And so that was more than 11 years ago now. And I was 15, almost 16, 6 weeks away from my 16th birthday. So, and I'm 27 now. I know everybody is doing the math. So I'm 27 now, but in their head. But
Samuel, I was told there was going to be no math in this interview here. No math.
Sorry. I'm trying to make it easy for everybody, so that you hear what we're saying instead of doing the math. Oh, I wonder how old he is now. So you know, there's a long period of writing this, right? So as I'm going along, I'm coming to some of those realizations, but I'm, you know, this is a long period and I'm a long way away. And I have that ability to kind of look back and make sense of what happened, because I have that distance, right, from what happened. So, and a lot of this, again, as I was writing, I was keeping journals. I had all these things there. But going through this process, I think what makes it even more, I'm able to have some of those more aha moments, because I'm have a little bit of distance. But I think the big thing I'd say, Tim, is that when I look back on what I felt in that moment of being 15 years old and having scars, and not knowing what the future looked like, you know, not knowing what was going to happen. I think the big thing that I, that aha moment was now on the other side of that. And then as I was writing it and kind of looking back on those years is how strong I was. Like I can look back and I can say, wow, I was a lot stronger than I thought I was. Right. And so there's this sense of, I think in the moment I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I'm ashamed of how I look. I'm wondering if anyone's ever going to love me, if I'm ever going to find a woman to love me because of how I look. You know, I'm struggling with my sense of self, who I am, lack of confidence. But as I come to the end of that journey and writing through this, kind of the aha moment was like, wow, I'm a lot stronger than I thought I was in that. And you know, I was able to just get up every morning and keep going. And even when I didn't have a lot of hope or had a lot of doubt about whether I could keep going, I did. And so there's something really empowering about that now, right? Like looking back to be able to say, wow, I made it through that. And so, you know, whatever comes my way in the future, I made it through this experience at 15, so I can make it through whatever comes my way again. So I think the biggest aha moment was just having the transforming the accident from this really negative, horrible experience that was a nightmare, right, in real life, mm-hmm. to, yeah, you know, I'm not going to say I'm happy it happened, or if I could go back in time, I wouldn't change things, right? But I will say that it has given me that sense of confidence and helped me become the person I am today. And I think it's contributed to some of the you know, fearlessness that I fear or that I feel as I go through life and kind of am ready to take anything on because I have that experience to kind of look back on. So it is kind of an interesting dichotomy, right? Of kind of how the suffering that we go through can also help sustain us when we're facing new suffering down the road in the future.
That's true. And I think once we all get through this whole pandemic thing, a lot of us are going to be surprised when we look back and as a collective human race, and we go, you know, wow, we went through, you know, how many months of, yeah, you don't really go outside of your house. Yeah, you know, when you go to the grocery store, half the stuff is gone. The other half of the stuff is stuff you don't want anyways. I mean, you know, liver and onions, I like, but nobody in my family does. Not really. You know, who would have thought in 2019, I'm considering buying 3 bidets for my bathroom. I'm just putting my kids through potty training and all that good stuff. And now I'm like, maybe I don't want toilet paper. Maybe I want a bidet. And then I think about one of my daughters who will remain nameless. She knows who she is. No bidet. No. That's a whole other podcast that has a lot of potty jokes in it that we don't need to get into here today. Now, again, Create Art Podcast, we're all about, you know, creating the art and finding out, you know, how people are doing what they're doing. The memoir is great. The columns are great. Just, you know, sitting and talking with you face to face, quote, you know, quotes again, air quotes again, that nobody can see, but just you and me. I can already tell that you're a very dynamic and very engaging, you know, public speaker. You must have taken one of my public speaking classes in VCU because you're doing fantastic with that. But what was the best piece of advice that you received while you're writing your memoir? Somebody gave you, or you might have read somewhere, or you know, maybe you saw an episode of Columbo and said, "That's the greatest thing since sliced bread. I need to make sure I do that for my memoir."
Yeah, you know, there's so much. It's advice is so invaluable, right? So as you go through life, there's so many. I think what makes a successful person, right, is being able to take advice and be able to have that ability to incorporate what applies to you and also kind of discard what doesn't, right? There's certain advice you can get from people that is very indicative of that person's experience. It may not apply to you specifically, but there's still things you can learn from it. There's still things you can glean. I think I'm one of those people who thinks that you can learn from anyone, no matter what their job, position, title, experience has been. Somebody has something to learn from everybody, I believe. So there's so many bits of advice that I've, you know, experienced through the years, but one that really stuck with me in pertaining to writing my memoir was when I was probably, I think it was a year or two after the accident, and there was a mentor of mine who actually happened to be a writer himself and a very successful writer, and had worked for the New York Times and written books, and was somebody that I was a family friend and I considered a mentor. You know, I remember him saying to me when I was talking about in the early stages of, hey, I want to, you know, I've been journaling, I've been writing, I really want to turn this into a book. You know, he gave me some really invaluable advice. And it was that saying that so many of us had heard, right, through the years, you know, show, don't tell, right? So when you're writing, make sure that you're showing, not telling. And it's harder to do than it sounds, right? And it's something I really struggled with. And I really, part of why the memoir took as long as it did for so many reasons, but one of it was I really wanted to get practice that art of how do I want the reader to walk alongside me and experience it with me versus me just telling them what it was like. And so it was really good advice to do that. And he kind of gave me some ideas of, hey, you know, people are really going to be interested in the doctor's appointments, right? So take notes on that and include that. And, you know, people are going to be really interested in some of these aspects of the experience that are so unique because, you know, not everybody has second and third degree burns on their face and arms and goes through countless surgeries. And so he was talking about, you know, really take notes on that and include that. And it really guided this project. And it was really great advice. I don't know if I would have necessarily taken it that direction if I hadn't gotten that advice. And it was really invaluable. And it really informed the process of, as I was writing, of what to include and what not to include, because it really informs, you know, there's a lot of details I could have included in the book, but if you bog too much down into the details, then you lose your readers, right? And so you want to, so the big thing that I did in my book was keep the chapters really short, right? So it's short chapters. It's less than 300 pages, the book itself. It's short. People, one of my goals was I wanted people to not be able to put it down. And a lot of the readers that have read this have contacted me and said, I couldn't put it down. It was, you know, I kept reading. I read it all in one sitting, you know, and that's what I wanted. I wanted people to not get bogged down by the details. And so, you know, I think that was really valuable advice to say, show, not tell, and find a way to bring your audience in with you so that they experience it alongside you. And it's not just, you know, the only way I think to make a memoir work is to invite others in. If it's just about you and your experience, but you don't have an open palm, you don't have the experience isn't open to others, and you're not showing it, then I think that it's not as relatable. And so I think that was something I was really striving for, and it was really invaluable advice, and I'm really grateful that I got it so early in this project, because it really helped inform it as it unfolded.
Absolutely. And it's funny you mentioned the whole doctor's appointments thing, because okay, I've never had third degree burns over my body, but I've had a number of surgeries. You know, when people are like, oh, 2020, I can't get through 2020. And I'm like, well, try, you know, a brain surgery and then four other surgeries in about 8 months' time while you're, you know, raising twin girls. 2020 is a breeze. Yeah, worldwide pandemic. Yeah, whatever. You know, civil unrest. That's Tuesday. You know, election stuff going on. That's last week. Come on. I got this handled. But, with, you know, like you said, when you're talking about the doctor's appointments, that's something that I don't have the exact experience that you have. And I'm not going to, even if I did have third degree burns on my body, my experience would be a little bit different. But that's something I can kind of touch on and go, all right, this makes sense. I know what, you know, I don't know exactly what he's going through because he went through it and I didn't, but it really, really connected me to the work as well. So I think you did that with just the right amount of stuff because yeah, we can all write War and Peace. We really can. But who reads War and Peace? Not a whole lot of people. Not my wife, and maybe not me. So yeah, one person in my household will read War and Peace, but that won't be me. But you know, with the size of the book and everything like that, and again, we're dealing with people's attention spans here, and you're really hitting at you know what people can do. You know, not everyone can read a thousand page book. With our commutes going on right now, I mean, you're up in Nova, I'm up in Nova. My commute went from 3 hours a day, which, you know, a 300 page book, yeah, I can get that knocked out in 3 or 4 days just on the train. Now my commute is 2 flights of stairs. Not even 5 minutes, you know? So, you know, I think one thing that I've noticed with podcasting is we've as an industry, we've had a little bit of a hit, but now it's coming back up. But with books, with people having more free time, having more time to do that, I'm thinking that they have more time to, well, they need to make time to read your book, obviously, and your columns, but people have more time, more of that free time to really dive into one of these books, dive into a memoir, and, find out how somebody else has made it through a very difficult situation. So, again, kudos to you on that.
Thank you, Tim. I appreciate it.
You got it. So, next thing here, this is a good one. Best piece of advice that you have, for sharing your story via Zoom or versus in public, in-person speaking. So, you know, a lot of people are doing the Zoom thing right now. I used to teach public speaking back in the day. I love it, but I'm having to, you know, ramp up my my Zoom game a whole lot at work. What's your advice? Because now you've done a bunch of a bunch of these Zoom calls and all that kind of good stuff, and a bunch of these podcasts. What's your advice for somebody going through this and doing this?
Yeah, you know, it really was not something that I expected. You know, when I was going through this process of publishing, and I thought, you know, when I was planning a 2020 release, early 2020 release, I had no idea that so much of my book tour would be, you know, through Zoom calls and doing it from my home office desk, right, versus being in person. So it really did flip the script. You know, it was not something that I had planned for at all. But I've learned that, you know, the big thing about Zoom is you have to make it fun, right? You have to make it light, and you have to connect, right? You still find ways to connect. You connect with the people you're talking to on Zoom, and you do that in ways that you would in person. But I think you have to find even more creative ways to do that over Zoom to keep it light, keep it, you know, be able to keep connecting even in this age of, you know, connecting through Zoom. And so I think it's finding those common points of commonality, talking about the collective experience we're in, but it's also just continuing to, you know, tell your story in a way that what I think is hard in sometimes, right, especially when I'm doing this, is you don't necessarily have the audience in the same way. When Zoom, it's very different. You don't necessarily have the energy and the feel of a room in the same way. And so you have to find ways to continue to stay motivated and to keep, I'm finding myself really having to look even more at the camera, look even more at the audience and see kind of the reaction, to kind of connect in a way so that you can feel more of that energy and be a part of it. And so I think it just takes being a little bit more intentional in your communication style and being more intentional in connecting with those on Zoom and being able to know your story and be prepared to tell it, even if you're not going to have the energy of a room in the same way as you would necessarily in person.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I love the, I've got a theater background, which we had talked about before. And that energy in a room, you can feel it, and it's just like, oh yeah, yeah, they get it. Whereas, you know, when you put it out in a book, even a Zoom call, you're like, they're smiling at me, they have pants on, I hope they get it. I hope they get it. So, promoting your work versus creating your work. We're all artists here. I consider everybody an artist that I talk to, and most people don't consider themselves an artist. They're an artist. They just don't know it yet. They haven't been on the show yet. After they're on the show, they know they're an artist. But one of the things we have to do as an artist is to promote our work. And the effort that you are spending promoting your work, how does that compare with creating the memoir? Are you doing more energy and promotion versus the creation, or is it something that is completely two separate worlds that requires different energy levels? How is that going for you?
Yeah, it's a great point, right? Because there's writing a book is such a monumental task. It's just such a, it's so much more involved than I ever could have, you know, thought from the beginning. And I knew at the time, I mean, you know, everybody says it's a lot of work to write a book, but it's a lot of work to write a book, right? So, so, you know, going through that process is, and what's hard about it is, you know, I had written so many words. It wasn't so much the writing itself, it's the editing, right? You've got to go in and you've got to edit and you've got to retool and you've got to get, you know, get the story to flow and make it a narrative and all those things. And what detail to include, what detail not to include. I mean, there's just a lot to think through when you're writing a book. You know, for me, I think it was a lot of effort to write the book. I tend to be a little bit of a perfectionist that I wanted, especially because it's such a personal story. I wanted everything to be just right. And I wanted to be really careful in how I wrote it because I wanted to make sure that it was a representation of the experience that I had. And I wanted to tell my own story in my own voice. Right. And so, you know, it was really important to me to get it right and to be able to be as accurate as possible and be able to tell everything in that book, but also not include too much, right? And keep the readers engaged. Mm-hmm. So there's that fine line. So it was a lot of work to do that, but I will tell you, like, promoting the book requires a level of effort, probably even more than writing it itself. Like you get to that stage. And again, everybody says, oh, it's hard to promote a book. But it's hard to promote a book. I mean, it's a lot of work. Yeah. You know, you spend a lot of time. And even if you have a great book, it's still a lot of time to contact people, to get on, you know, whether it's getting on podcasts, getting in newspapers, getting opportunities to speak. You know, you're really your own entrepreneur when you write a book. You're starting your own business and you're having to constantly just continue to hit the pavement and you know, every day, do a little bit every day. The key for me has been, I had to be careful, especially in the beginning. I was so eager to get it out there that in some ways I burned out, right? I was working so hard at it and I was contacting all these people and doing all this. And you have to be careful. I think you have to space it out and you have to remember that it's a long-term game, that, you know, even if your book doesn't sell as many copies as you want it to in the first 30 days or in the launch period, you've got years to promote a book, right? You've got 2 to 5 years, if not longer, to really promote that book, to get people excited about it. And I've been really blessed and grateful for the support I've received and the people who have bought this book, who've, you know, left reviews on Amazon, which are invaluable. Reviews are key. You know, people who've invited me on their podcast, like you, I'm so grateful to be here. There's been so many good things that have happened. I've gotten a lot of exposure. I've been in several newspapers, but it takes work. Like, you have to, as an author, you can't expect to write a book and just throw it on Amazon and expect it to sell. Like, you have to go out there, and it's easy to get discouraged, right? You're going to get rejections. Even the things that, even if you have a great rate of like, hey, I'm getting accepted to more things than I'm getting rejected, there's still a lot of rejection in this. And you, especially with something like my book, that's very personal, you have to make sure that you're not taking it personally and that you're saying, you know what? It's my story. I'll go somewhere else and somebody will want to hear what I have to say. So there's a couple different things, long-winded answer to your question, but I think the promotion is definitely a lot of work. And in some ways it's even more work than the book, but it's like what you said. I like how you say it's a different level of energy, and it's a level of energy. I like interfacing with people, talking to people, contacting people. I can see if that wasn't something that I liked, it would be really hard because, you know, promoting is you have to always be talking about your book, posting about your book, you know, and sometimes it gets a little repetitive. But the more you talk about it, the more people are going to buy it. Sometimes people need to see it 5 to 7 times before they're going to buy it, right? So you have to, you know, get the word out there and keep going. And it's definitely a marathon, not a sprint.
Perfect. And Samuel, where can people see this book? What's the website that they need to be going to right now to see this book?
Well, again, if you go to www.samuelmoore-sobel.com, it'll take you directly there. You can go straight to Amazon and you could search for "Can You See My Scars?" And it'll come right off. Like I said, it's on sale right now on Amazon. You'll get it. If you're a Prime member, you'll get it within 2 days. So go check it out. You can also see the reviews. I've got, as of today, 27 reviews on Amazon. My book was leaked on September 1st, the 11th anniversary of my accident. So super excited for the people who've reviewed it and really been touched by the story.
And folks, we're going to have the link in the show notes. So read the show notes three times. You've already heard it two times. You've got your five times of having that link. I guarantee you, before the show ends, we'll have the link for you at least two more times. At least two more times. But some people, though, have a problem with shameless self-promotion. I go to a lot of poetry readings, and, you know, pre-COVID, it seems like we're always going to be saying pre-COVID, post-COVID, you know, during COVID. But pre-COVID, I'd go to readings and stuff like that, and people would do the, well, here's a shameless self-plug, and it was kind of self-deprecating humor on themselves. But that's one thing that you really need to be comfortable with, is need to be able to fit it into appropriately any conversation that you're having. I know in our pre-talk that we had before we started recording the other night, that one thing that I really appreciated about you is that you listened to, you know, kind of my babble going on, and, you know, you didn't hammer home, well, you got to read page 27, you got to read page, you just offered it up. If I wanted to take it, I took it. If I didn't want to take it, you know, it's kind of like going to a buffet. Take what you want. I have it here for you. If you don't want it, it's not for, it may not be for that person at that time. And I'm stealing that from Seth Godin, because I love Seth Godin. Love him to death. I would have him tattooed on my chest if I could, but I've already got stuff tattooed on my chest, so I can't do that. But it, one of his things is, you know, your work may not be for everybody, and that's okay. You know, reading through this book, I think a lot of people could find stuff to connect with it. You may not be able to connect to the whole thing, but there is nuggets in here, folks, that you are going to be able to connect with. And where you can connect with it is samuelmoore.sobel, M-O-O-R-E. Make sure you're spelling more correctly. .com, and you can also go on to Amazon and knock it out that way for yourself. See, we got one more in. We got one more to go.
Well, and I would say too, Tim, you know, the other thing I would say on that too is it's a great point, because, you know, for this kind of book, as long I you know, there's something really gratifying about getting my message out there too. So even people out there who, like you said, maybe it's not for them at this time, but being able to speak, to talk, to encourage people, to meet them where they are, there's something really valuable as a writer having a platform to be able to do that. Even if people don't, you know, buy your book right away, being able to connect with them and talk to them and encourage them and meet them where they are is really powerful. And to me, jump at the opportunity to get the message out there. And so that's really meaningful to me, because I want to make a difference in people's lives, whether they buy the book or not. You know, I want people to make a difference and to be encouraged by what they hear from what I say. So there's an element there too, as a writer, of, you know, you also take it with a grain of salt and say, hey, maybe this wasn't for where this person was, but maybe they'll remember what I said. And years later, it'll speak to them when they confront adversity in their own lives.
Exactly. And you know what? I never said, when that 3.2 million books would be absolutely sold. So that could take a few years. I got to hit the, lottery a couple of times, but that's going to happen. That is going to happen. All right. So when someone, reads your memoir, what's one thing that's going to surprise them? Again, I don't want you to give away a little, you know, too much, on your book here, obviously, but somebody reads that, what's going to surprise them after they read the book?
I think that what is surprising to people, and one of the, some of the feedback that I've received from readers is, I think what's surprising is I try to write this book as authentically and honestly as possible, right? I talk about even some of my worst moments, right? I don't try to sugarcoat. I'm not the hero. I didn't do everything right. You know, I want people to see the unvarnished truth. Because I want people to see what it looks like to suffer. We all know what it's like to suffer. It doesn't do anybody any good if I wrote this book and just, you know, sugarcoated everything and made myself out to be the hero. I mean, there's plenty of mistakes I made. I talk about that really openly. And so I think it might surprise people, just the authenticity of that and the things I talk about, what that, you know, are probably things that a lot of people would rather keep to themselves about their experience, right? I talk about my mental health struggles. I talk about struggling with thoughts of suicide for at times, right? I mean, I talk really openly about, I include a lot of passages from my counseling sessions with my psychiatrist and talk about what that was like and reasoning through what was happening to me and how I was feeling. And, you know, he was a great psychiatrist and helped facilitate that. But I think what may surprise people is that, you know, the journey to healing is not a straight line, right? There was a lot of twists and turns. There was a lot of things that didn't go the way that I planned or I thought it would go, just like anything in life. But I think that in the end, I hope people walk away with the sense that it's okay, that it's okay to not have it all figured out. It's okay to take 11 years or 10 years like I did to really come through this journey, to come to peace with your scars, to come to a place of acceptance and forgiveness. And it took me, so it was probably about 8 years to really hit that true place. And so I think that just the authenticity with what I write was really important to me, because again, I want people to be able to connect with it and I want people to glean from it and take what they will from it so that it encourages them. And hopefully they don't make some of the same mistakes I made in their own healing journeys. And hopefully they can learn from some of that. And that's what I want. I want people to be able to take it and infuse this great meaning in my own experience if it can impact others for good.
Perfect. And folks, after you read the book, make sure you make your own beautiful mistake. You know, Samuel's already made his beautiful mistakes, wonderful mistakes. He's already done them. He bought the t-shirt. He's already there. He's good to go. talking a little bit about scars, because we had talked about this in the pre-show before I thought of a question for you. And a lot of this is learning from our scars and then being able to expose those scars and show them. Let's talk a little about scars as a form of art, because, you know, there's some parts of this book that are not pretty. They are not pretty. Looking at me some days, I'm not pretty, but there is a story to the scars. You have scars. I have scars. We've kind of, you know, obviously you've shared your stories of your scars through your memoir. And then, you know, I've shared some of my scar stories with that. But how do you feel that as a form of art, as a form of sharing our stories, obviously it works for you with the memoir, sharing those scars. But how does that feel for you? What is the artistic thing behind that?
Yeah, that's such a deep and complicated question, right? It's you know, I think scars are part of having scars is simply being human, right? We, like you're saying, we all have scars, and through this experience, I came to believe that we truly all have scars. You know, some of the scars that we have may be physical, you know, like mine are on my face. And especially, you know, I look a lot better today than I did in the days, you know, right after the accident. But, you know, so it may be obvious to the people we meet that, hey, there's scars on your face. But we all have those internal scars, right? We all have those emotional scars, you know, incurred from, you know, a death of the family or a traumatic experience, or, you know, anything can fall into that category, and it leaves scars along the way. And so I think the question, you know, it isn't so much whether we have scars, it's what do we do with our scars once we have them, right? And I think we could choose to create art with our scars, right? I think we can choose to see our scars for more than what the culture tells us to see them, right? So if you look at, you know, a lot of what the culture, you know, you look at movies, you look at, you know, there's Freddy Krueger, there's, you know, Scarface, sure. there's kind of these images of scars that are evil, right? Scar, you know, somebody with scars in the media, you know, some of the villains, right, in the Bond movies, you know, there's this kind of equation with scars, and we equate that with evil. And I think that, and part of why I do this is I want to change that narrative, right? I think scars are objects of beauty. I think scars are they're objects of survival. They're objects of reminders, right? They help identify the struggles we've been through, but they also were able to take the scars that we have and say, hey, you know, again, I've been through this horrible experience. I have the scars to prove it, but my scars remind me that when I, you know, whatever I'm doing down the road, I can overcome that adversity as well. And so, I think part of being scars is part of using our scars rather to inform the way we approach life is artistic, right? We have to, you know, for me, I used to look in the mirror every morning and see these scars and be ashamed. And it would bring back all those memories of the worst day of my life. Right. But in the last few years, the perspective has shifted. When I look in the mirror now, I see the ways in which that experience, emboldened me, gave me confidence, you know, all this, the ways I was able to survive and the way I was able to use these scars now to impact others and offer my scars to the world and say, here are my scars. You know, what shall you do with yours? Right. I'm here to offer you my scars. I'm here to offer my story to you. What you choose to do with it is your choice. But I think that there's such a beauty in sharing our story and sharing our scars. And I think it's really a way to change the world. You know, the world is changed one scar at a time, right? When we, one story at a time and one scar at a time, when we share our scars with other people, it encourages others who are going through adversity and they say, hey, if Samuel made it through this, I too can make it through whatever I'm experiencing. And that's the goal, right? I want people to walk away from this podcast, walk away from reading this book, by reading my column, going to my website. I want people to walk away thinking, hey, I can do this too. And I think that's where the art form comes through, is saying, you know, it's an encouragement to them and evidence to them that, hey, I can do this. Whatever comes my way, I could take it head on.
Yeah, absolutely. I talked to you about my scars, and I think you mentioned this earlier, is that it's empowering. When we get the scars, we're vulnerable. That's maybe we're at our weakest point in our life. Who knows? Again, physical scars, emotional scars, mental scars, the whole 10 yards, they all matter. They all affect us. And then when we have wisdom after years of living with those scars and utilizing, what limitations that we now have. My left hand is fully fused, can't bend it whatsoever, but that's been since 1993, longer than most people have been alive, as I get older and older every year. But I've learned to adapt with that. And actually, when my girls were born, not when they were born, but maybe about a year or two after that, they were looking at my hand and they didn't, you can still see it, but they just saw that as Papa's hand. That's what hands look like. And I pointed it out to them. I'm like, oh no, actually I had motorcycle accident and, you know, there's pins and screws and staples in there and it can't move. And my girls, oh my God, kids can sometimes be the best and sometimes be the worst at this. But my two girls, which, you know, they're perfect. I'm not biased whatsoever. and one day you will get to meet them, and may you be blessed with children like mine. But they just went right into it, and they were just, you know, they were caring for it. They were rubbing the scars. They're like, it'll be okay, Papa. It'll be okay. And I'm like, I've already, you know, I've already dealt with that. I am past that now. And then when they brought it up and they showed their caring, it's like, wait a minute, you know, I didn't get that kind of caring when I got that scar. Now I'm getting that caring, and that feels great to have somebody. Yeah, they're my kid, and yeah, they're a little kid, but you know, that kind of innocent love and all that kind of good stuff that kids have, actually caring for me. So, not a podcast about me and my scars, but you know, I just sharing my experience with you and amplifying your experience with that. That can happen for us, and that should be praised. And you know, the art of scar is something that you actually brought up to me in our pre-interview about that, and now it's making me think of, that's another podcast episode right there. So folks, after this comes out, look for it to happen. We'll want to see your scars. But before we want to see your scars, we want to see you go to Samuel Moore, all one word, with two O's, Sobel, SOBEL.com. Go and buy 3.2 million copies of his book. Very simple. That's all you got to do. 3.2 million. We can do it by the end of next week after this comes out. All right. So one thing that I really wanted to ask you about this, because you are putting a lot of yourself out in this book, and that is, was there a point of doubt in this project that you're like, I'm not going to finish this. I don't feel comfortable doing this. And how did you, obviously you overcame that doubt if you had that. How did you overcome that doubt?
Yeah, I think it's natural. I think we all come to, with anything we do, right? There's always those doubts. I think it's human to doubt. And I think I definitely struggled with that along the way, right? Throughout this process of, you know, can I do this? Should I do this? I remember the trepidation I felt even up until, you know, when this book officially came out, right? Of, you know, just a few months ago, of this is going to be out there. Like, people are going to read this, you know, of, people I know, my friends, my family, people at work, people I don't know, you know, I mean, it's kind of terrifying, right? And so, like, what if they don't like it? It's so personal. And I think I had to come to a place where this story, before this story came out, I think I had to come to a place where I felt comfortable releasing the story because the story had come to a conclusion, right? And so I think there was, you know, I just had my last surgery just a few years ago. And so much of the story was still happening. And so there was that sense of, you know, you mentioned like the imposter syndrome, like there was times where I was kind of like, am I this person as I'm writing this and I'm telling people, right, you know, about scars and the beauty of scars and what we could see in scars, you know, do I really believe that? Do I really feel that? And so there was this sense in which I think part of why the project took as long as it did was I needed to reach that place. I needed to be authentic and reach that place myself. You know, I was able to do that, I think, to put the doubts to rest officially when I talk about it in the book of going to my first World Burn Congress, which was with sponsored by the Phoenix Society for Burn Survivors, which is a great organization. Definitely check, listeners should check that out, phoenixsociety.org. But, you know, I going to that experience and meeting other burn survivors really put to rest. It was kind of the final step I needed, the straw that broke the camel's back, as it were, of really coming to a place of healing and acceptance of my scars, of who I am, and seeing, you know, the scars as beautiful and seeing the beauty in the scars that I have. So, you know, it was really getting to that place, and it took me, I mean, that was 8 years into my journey. And so it was a long time, but I wanted to be able to reach that place authentically before I was ready to share this with the world. And that really put a lot of the doubts to rest from that point forward. And then of course you always have the doubts of, is anybody going to read this? Is anybody going to care? You know, you're always kind of worried about that. You know, what if this is a massive failure? What if I put this out there and even though I've invested my own time and my own money and my own energy into this, what if people, you know, it's a massive flop, right? And thankfully, you know, people have been very gracious in their reviews of the book and all of that. But, you know, I definitely, the way to push through that was just kind of, I believed in the story. I believed in the power of what I had to say. And I felt led to do this. I felt like this was just, you know, what I wanted to, what needed to happen, whether I wanted to or not, right? It was an inescapable story. There was times where I went through, I don't put it in the book, but, you know, when I went to college, I didn't want to talk about the story anymore. I didn't want to be known as the boy who was burned, but people kept asking me about it. I still, you know, it was still part of who I was. And so it was that story that I couldn't escape anyway. And so why try, you know, at least embrace it, come to peace with it, and then share it with others to impact others. And the last thing I'll say is, I think what was really empowering about this is, you know, if I didn't share this with anyone else, if I let the doubt overcome my thoughts and prevent me from actually putting this out there, to me, it would have just been this horrible accident that never should have happened, right? There wouldn't have been any redemption. There wouldn't be any redemptive action to this story if I kept it to myself. The redemptive aspect is borne out through the impact to others. And so when I hear from other readers who say, hey, you know, I heard from a reader recently who said, you know, you're reading your book made me realize that I'm struggling with some of the same mental health struggles, right? And it encouraged them to go to counseling and work with that. And you know, this person said to me, I never would have known this if I hadn't read your book. And that was so impactful to me because I thought, wow, that's what I'm trying to do here is to be able to do that. And there's been so many examples just in the 2 months it's been out now of people saying, this really impacted me. And to me, there's a redemptive aspect. And so, to all your listeners out there who are thinking about whether to write or not, or whatever art that they're trying to create, share that with the world. If you believe in what you're doing and you're doing it for the right reasons and you're trying to make an impact in the world for good, put it out there and see what happens. And, even if you just impact one person, it was worth it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's that smallest viable audience, again, that Seth Godin talks about. I'm going to have to start paying Seth Godin and sponsor on his show to pay back for all the advice that I get from him. Oh, my gosh. All right, Samuel, I'm going to hit you with our world famous question here.
Okay.
How do you create more than you consume? We all consume art. We're all, connected into this digital world like never before. How do you create more than you consume? And you take that any way you want to go with it.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a lot of different ways you can go with that, right? Mm-hmm. I think that so it's an interesting balance, right? Because I think that you could make the argument that by consuming or your consumption, as it were, can actually inform your creation, right? So, mm-hmm. For me, one of the ways I do that is through my column, as we talked about before. A lot of my column was me going out in the world and experiencing something and then coming back and then, or reading an article or reading someone else started reading, reading a book and then coming back and saying, okay, here's my thoughts, and analyzing kind of my view on that. And then teasing out what would appeal to other people and what would appeal to the readership and what the commonality there in the experience and doing it that way. So I think you could, use some of the consumption of art to actually fuel your own, your own work and creation and that can kind of inspire you to go out and create too. For me, I think it's really important to structure time for creating, as it were, right? So obviously, my column is a time where I'm always thinking about my column because, the deadline, I'm always writing on deadline and it comes quickly, right? So even though it's monthly, I'm already on the next one. I've got to start the next column while the one's done and be, going through even after I've submitted it of what am I going to write next month. And so even if it's in my head, I'm thinking about what am I going to create for this next month. And then obviously, there's guest blogging and some of the other things that I've been doing to continue to make sure that I'm creating. Cause I don't, want to just write this book and be done and say, okay, I'm done creating, right? I want to still find time to do that even in the busyness of life. And so for me, I think I have this kind of pattern of in the morning, I'll read some articles, I'll do some kind of consumption, right? Read a book, whatever it is. And then I like to have some time in the late afternoon and evenings after work and, be able to kind of write. And even if it's journaling or even if it's kind of creating that next column or whatever the creation is, to really be intentional about that time, because the danger is, right, that if you're not intentional about it, it just won't happen. And then you're not, spending the time creating. So I think it takes some intentionality. I think it's, for me, having the column is a great vehicle to continue to have that deadline of like, well, I have to create by this date, right? So it's good to be able to do that. But I think it's important to set aside time to do that. And then there's also time to create that maybe you don't share with anybody. Maybe you just put it in your journal or maybe it's a painting or maybe it's something else that you're creating and it's only between yourself. You're the only one who knows that you've done this and you keep it in your house and lock it away. And that's okay too. Like I think there's things that are we can create that are just for us and our eyes only as individuals. And then, there's things that we'll create and share with the world. So I think there's a balance there, but I think for me, it's just really being intentional about what I'm creating, what I want to say, and making sure that I'm allotting time to be able to create even in the midst of busyness of life.
Folks, that is the perfect answer. He does win the prize. 3.2 million books sold. No. No, but I every point that you're making there, that we have to consume something in order to create. We have to be influenced by something in order to create. And if you have that creative bug, if you have that creative calling, which I honestly believe we all do. Sometimes we're lazy about it and we're like, I'll do the novel next year. I'll do the painting after I watch 5 episodes of Bob Ross. You know, I got to wait for 5 episodes of Bob Ross before I can do a painting. By that time, you're asleep, you know, because 3 episodes, and I have twin 6-year-olds that are out after 3 episodes. So great parenting tips on Create Art Podcast that you didn't know you're going to get. Excellent. All right. Samuel, I definitely want to thank you for being here with us and really, you know, talking about your book, talking about your process, talking about what affects you and what impacts you. Is there any question that I didn't ask that you would like me to go ahead and ask right now?
That's a great question, Tim.
You can always say no. You're fine. We're good. We're out of here. But if you have a question that I didn't ask, that you're like, I'm chomping at the bit for you to ask this question, now is your time.
Gosh, that's a great question. I think I've covered most everything. I guess the last thing, you know, again, I would just say that, you know, the purpose of this book, you know, why I wrote this book, right? You know, I the concept of this book was very early in. I was probably 3 or 4 weeks after the accident. I was lying awake one night in bed, and I was having trouble sleeping, and I was having a lot of insomnia and things like that, even that early on. And I remember thinking, kind of this light bulb going on in my head of kind of like, hey, I'm going to write this book, and that's what I'm going to do with this story. I'm going to write a book. And I didn't know how I was going to do it, right? I didn't really know. I didn't have the words for this experience because it was so hard to find the words to describe what it felt like to have second, three, and third degree burns to my face and arms. But I think I would just offer this encouragement again, just as we close to your listeners of, you know, sometimes it takes time, you know, sometimes it takes really time to get there. And my journey, you know, it, like I said, it was 11 years and it took, you know, a long time to get to that place to even as I was journaling, to find the words to describe it and to get it out there. But I will say that if I had it to do it over again, I would do it again. I mean, because again, to make that impact in people's lives is invaluable. And so I would just encourage everybody out there, if you have an idea for something, whatever it may be, and you have the right motivations, the right passions, you know, go for it and run after it and share something with the world. You know, the world is in need of your story. And I think that you could change the world through sharing your story with another person.
There it is there, folks. And, you know, before you know it, Samuel's going to have a podcast ready to rock and roll to compete with this one right here. That's for sure. But before he does, you need to go buy his book, Samuel Moore, M-O-O-R-E, don't get that messed up, -Sobel, SOBEL.com. Go grab his book. Go buy 3.4 million copies. I'm sorry. We're doing 3.4 million copies this time. Go buy his book. Go check him out online with his columns that he's writing for the paper. And definitely give some support to him because he is doing some really great work and he's doing it from his heart. And I know that you heard it through this podcast, the excitement and the passion that he has. So thank you again.
Well, Tim, let me just add too here. I forgot to add this as well. I will be I'm planning on donating a portion of the profits from this book to the Phoenix Society for Burn Survivors. So buying this book is supporting a good cause as well. They do great work for the burn survivor community, and so that's my goal here is to be able to use some of those profits to impact others and impact other burn survivors and their families for good. So buying this book is supporting a good cause.
Thank you for listening to Create Art Podcast and our interview with Samuel Moore Sobel. And I know that it was a very enlightening and inspirational interview that we had with him. For more episodes, you can always go to our website, createartpodcast.com. If you'd like to be interviewed, feel free, like Samuel did, and email me, Timothy@createartpodcast.com. We'd love to share your story with everybody that listens to this podcast, and you can always hit us up on our media, our social media. We're on Twitter, and we're on Instagram. On Twitter, we're at Create Art Pod, and Instagram, Create Art Podcast. And again, you can always check us out on our website, createartpodcast.com, and toss us an email, timothy@createartpodcast.com. And we hope this episode has helped you create more than you consume. Until then, we'll see you next time.